Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying tale is about this correctional officer who works at this scientific black ops location, where they are dissecting and engineering this life form that was found on a meteorite somewhere in Antarctica. And what happens in front of his very eyes, and the possibility of what may happen to all of us, is terrifying. Now let's get spooky. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. The female scientist in front of me put a few drops of the rainbow-colored iridescent substance into the meals of each condemned man. She inspected the food and drink closely, making sure none of the tampered was visible. Then she looked over at me, her eyes as cold as the emptiness of space. "Officer Templeton," she said, "please bring the subjects their lunch." I nodded nervously, my mouth dry. "Yes, doctor," I said, grabbing the tray cart and putting all of the trays of food in the slots within. I was a correctional officer who worked in certain black ops sites around the northeastern United States. I had originally started as a typical army grunt before being offered this job, which had a much higher pay. At times like this, however, I regretted ever signing the contract to work as a CO. The subjects were all men taken from prisons or other black ops sites, people who would no longer notice were missing. They were all serving life sentences or on death row, and had no family or friends on the outside who would ask questions. They were, in essence, the perfect people to go missing. At times, I felt bad for them, but I would remind myself of what they had done to get here. Some were serial killers, others serial rapists or pedophiles, and a couple were lifelong gang members who had killed guards and other rival gang members in prison. Still, some of the experiments I had seen at these sites were enough to turn my stomach, no matter who they were inflicted on. I typed in the numeric code to open the cell door. Every eye turned towards me as I walked in. A few of the inmates were playing a game of poker, using a ripped-up sheet of paper for chips. Some were laying on the bunk beds. "Time for chow," I said. They all got up, walking over to me and grabbing a tray in turn. Behind me, another CO named Mahoney, armed with a pistol, stood at the door, blocking the exit in case any of the men tried to escape. When the task was done, I quickly turned and rolled the cart back out into the hall, and my partner hit the button to close the door behind me. The smell of fried chicken, rice, and string beans rose from the cell as the men started to open their trays and eat. The female scientist came out of her office. She was in charge of this experiment. She surveyed the men like a farmer who would survey his cattle before bringing them to the slaughterhouse. Not a shred of empathy or humanity shone in her face. All I saw there was a kind of glee and excitement. "Dr. Shearer," Officer Mahoney said to the scientist, "how long do you think it will take before the effects are noticed?" Her face swiveled towards him, the creepy half-smile still plastered across her face. "You tell me," she said, pointing into the cell. It had only been a few minutes, but I realized that subtle things were beginning to happen to the inmates. Leaving their trays half-finished, they all stood up in unison, staring with shell-shocked and totally blank expressions out into the hallway where the three of us watched them. Something began to drip from their eyes. It resembled the drops that she had put in the food, like liquefied opal that flowed down their faces, shimmering in the light and casting tiny rainbows as they fell to the floor. "What the F is that?" I muttered to Mahoney. He turned, his expression strained. He nervously smoothed out his black uniform, running his hands over it over and over. "That," Dr. Shear said, "is the key to understanding how all life began. But watch, it gets better. The effects of the substance were so fast-acting that it seemed impossible. It was as if it had been administered by intravenous injection rather than through the food they ate. Their skin began to change rapidly. No matter their race or how light or dark their skin color was, it began to morph into a bone-white color. Small patches began to turn on their faces and hands, then joined together in larger and larger patches until their entire bodies had changed color. Underneath their bleached skin, I could see their veins turning black, pulsating and rippling in time with their heartbeats. The crying had stopped by this point, but all of their eyes now sparkled with the same scintillating rainbow irises. And then the chaos truly began. They were still changing, morphing into something inhuman. When they rushed towards the metal bars of the cell in unison, there was no signal between them, no word or eye contact or motion of any kind. It was as if we were watching a hive mind. Their fingernails grew rapidly into black talons. Their cheeks ripped open as their mouths opened far wider than humanly possible. Black goo dripped from their mouths, mixing with the dark red blood from their torn skin, puddling on the floor beneath them. Their muscles seemed to swell, ripping open their jumpsuits, and every one of their hairs began to fall out. With superhuman strength, the first ones to the bars grabbed the metal and began to twist and bend it. Mahoney yelled in surprise, pulling his pistol. Dr. Shearer put her slight hand on the gun, pushing it down. "No, this is all part of the experiment. It is under control. Do not open fire unless there is an immediate risk of death," she said, her voice still sounding calm and curious, not at all upset by the horrifying transformations that had just taken place in front of us. Mahoney turned to face the doctor, an expression of terror and rage on his face. He started to say something, but an arm stretching to an inhuman length flit out through the cell, wrapping around his neck and pulling him close. Another bleached white arm reached through the bent metal of the cell, grabbing his gun from his holster. I saw it all happening in slow motion, wondering how things could have gone so wrong. How did life on Earth begin? The tall, dark-haired scientist said at the meeting. Mahoney and I sat at the back, invited to the briefing due to the planned test subjects being our charges. The rest of the room was filled with scientists, government officials, CIA agents, and others. The quiet was so absolute when the head scientist stopped speaking that I could hear my own heartbeat. There are a few ideas, maybe at the vents at the bottom of the ocean, or through lightning strikes around naturally created amino acids. But there is new evidence that life did not start on Earth at all. In 2017, an expedition to Antarctica uncovered a massive meteorite buried beneath the ice. At first, we thought it was just another discovery of a chunk of space rock, interesting to examine and dissect, but nothing revolutionary. That was, until samples were brought back to the United States and tested in the laboratory. There was something in those samples that was never found in any meteorite before. It had some sort of white organic life form in the center. At first, the team thought it may have been an extremophile's bacteria from Earth that had grown off rich elements present, even in the sub-zero conditions of Antarctica. That was until we isolated and tested it, and we found it was unlike anything ever before seen on this planet. It wasn't a mold or fungus. It wasn't a bacterium. It certainly wasn't an animal or a parasite, but it had properties of all of them. When it was taken out of the freezing temperatures of Antarctica, it began to replicate immediately. Samples of its DNA seemed to indicate some sort of super-resilient organism, one that could survive at temperatures hundreds of degrees below zero, or survive tens of thousands of degrees above it. This was the type of life form that could survive in the freezing vacuum of space, even when exposed to high levels of radiation from stars, or a catastrophic impact, such as a meteorite impacting a planet or a moon. We have tried injecting the pure substance into test animals. It has amazing properties. It can mutate the DNA of a host, absorb itself into the cells of any animal, plant, or fungus, and ensure its future survival through such a symbolic relationship. It can reverse tumors and cancer within some of the test animals. It also appears to reverse aging. But, along with these beneficial effects, it has many deleterious ones. It tends to change their skin color, cause hair loss, and, at times, it causes insanity or hyper-aggressive behavior. The real question, then, is how could such a life form have evolved? Based on our primitive understanding of xenobiology, my hypothesis is this. It didn't. Even the most extreme natural life form on Earth doesn't have a tiny percent of the residency of this alien substance, which I have given the working name of Primordia. My hypothesis is that this life form was engineered long ago by an extraterrestrial civilization far more advanced than humanity. They may have taken the genes from all of the most resilient life forms they encountered, perhaps adding totally synthetic genes as well to make it nearly impossible to kill under natural conditions. If true, this ancient extraterrestrial civilization might have used genetic engineering to create Primordia and seeded countless asteroids with it. If they had the technology to travel through space, then they likely could have used neutron stars or black holes to begin throwing millions of seeded asteroids off of their orbits, sending them hurling through space. Inevitably, some of those asteroids impacted planets or moons with liquid water, and the organism began to replicate, starting the process of life. Based on the impact date of this meteorite, estimated to be about 3.6 to 3.8 billion years ago, this would coincide perfectly with the first trace evidence of primitive life on our planet. In short, we may have all evolved from a genetically engineered alien life form that only impacted our planet through the smallest of probabilities. The most important thing now, though, is that we see what kind of symbolic relationship this might have with human test subjects. If certain genes with Primordia are able to reverse cancer, aging, heart disease, or other fatal conditions, it could be the beginning of a cure for death itself. I looked over at Mahoney, raising my eyebrow. He looked pale and uncertain under the fluorescent lights of the room. Murmuring began all around as the government officials and scientists began to whisper to each other. It was that same day that I learned they wished to inject this alien substance into the first human host bodies and that I was to supervise it. As the pistol was pulled from its holster, I saw Dr. Shearer sprint down the hall, leaving C.O. Mahoney to his fate and abandoning me in this time of crisis. I didn't blame her, even though I got the impression she was a cold, psychopathic bitch. But my first impression was also to get the hell out of there. I couldn't leave Mahoney behind, though. I wasn't the type of person who would leave someone to die horribly while I sprinted to safety. However, I had no weapon on me, other than a taser and a spray canister of tear gas. As the pistol was raised towards me, the long hands and claws of the transformed convict holding it awkwardly, I pulled out my tear gas and began spraying it. Some of it landed on Officer Mahoney's face, causing him to scream in pain. He turned his head up to the ceiling, tears streaming down his cheeks, his skin turning red and irritated wherever the liquid touched him. Most of it landed on the face of the creature behind him, however, and yet, it didn't seem to affect the monster. Its eyes glistened brighter, its irises shining as more crystalline rainbows flowed down its face, the black veins of its monstrous face beating faster. It didn't look away or drop the gun, however. I jumped forward, using Mahoney's body for cover as the pistol began firing. The gunshots were deafening in such close quarters. I heard the bullets whizzing past my head and smashing into the concrete wall behind me. I grabbed my taser and fired it at the monster with the gun. It screamed, making a sound like a banshee. It was so loud, I could almost feel the pulsing sound waves against my skin. My ears were already ringing from the gun, and now the pain was agonizing. I dropped my taser and ran out of there, giving up any hope of single-handedly rescuing my partner. While I still regret the decision to this day, I believe if I had stayed, we both would have died. What I really needed was backup. I hoped the doctor was already calling for it, but I couldn't be sure of anything at this point. The screaming stopped as suddenly as it had begun. The silence was eerie in the aftermath of such a battle. I turned to look back one last time, and what I saw still gives me nightmares to this day. The creatures had all gathered around the bent, twisted metal bars of the cell. The one holding Mahoney unfurled a black, spiked tongue from its mouth. Drops of shiny, pearl-like liquid dropped from its spikes. It reached out like a snake, twisting and writhing as the tongue wrapped around Mahoney's face. With a silent scream, his mouth was forced open. His eyes focused on me one last time as the serrated tongue flicked into his mouth. His cheeks bulged, then his neck. It slid all the way down his throat, leaving drops of mutagenic poison on their way. The creatures behind him in the cell had all grown in height by this point. They each stood 7 or 8 feet tall, their muscles still growing, their legs lengthening. With every passing minute, their humanity seemed to fade away. The new DNA inserting itself into their cells took over, changing them and strengthening them. With a roar, they began to rip the metal bars off of the cell, flinging them to the concrete walls with a tremendous echo. By this point, I had made it most of the way down the hall. The elevator was at the end of the corridor. I frantically pushed the button to ascend to the ground level, but the doors wouldn't close. A siren began to wail overhead throughout the entire complex, and a robotic voice issued. "Lockdown procedure initiated," it said in an emotionless voice. "All exits are sealed. Help is on the way. Please remain calm." I wanted to scream. Please remain calm? The robot wasn't the one being faced with a group of monstrous creatures bending metal with the sheer power of their mutated bodies. Then, I remembered that we had extra guns in the armory room. I left the elevator heading towards the armory, which was only a few doors down. I spun around, locking the door behind me in an instant, then walked over to the massive safe. Within were multiple 12-gauge shotguns, hundreds of rounds of ammo, and a dozen pistols. Without hesitation, I grabbed a shotgun, loading it up with slugs. It was the best gun for close range, and the slugs would put an exit wound the size of grapefruits into the body of even the toughest creature. But as I stood there, trembling, waiting for death, the shotgun pointed at the door, I heard the creatures running past. Their footsteps entered the elevator. With a heavy smashing sound, I heard them breaking open the top vents. The elevator wouldn't work, but they could still climb up the shaft and potentially break their way out of the complex, infecting more people along the way. By the time I realized what was happening, it was too late for me to do much. I unlocked the door, running out into the hallway. The only creature left standing on the level was Mahoney, who was growing taller and mutating before my very eyes. He was still recognizable as having been human, but his skin was rapidly changing colors, his clothing ripped as the muscles thickened before my eyes. He turned, his eyes wide, his mouth open.
"Kill me!"
he said in a pained, deep voice that was nothing like his own. It had a gurgling quality, an almost demonic pitch that resonated through the halls as he spoke. That voice will remain in my mind forever. I shot him once in the head, putting him down instantly. The back of his skull disintegrated. Running past his body, I entered the elevator, looking up at the ruined ceiling of it. They had destroyed the lights, ripping the metal in multiple places and tore the emergency hatchway open right off its hinges. I saw the last one scurrying up the metal cable to the top floor, about to jump through to the ground floor elevator door, which had already been pried open by clawed hands. I opened fire, shooting multiple shotgun slugs at the creature. The first one missed, but the second and third one hit it in the legs, spraying gore all over the cable and shaft walls and causing it to fall backwards. It fell down 5 stories and, with a tremendous crash, went right through the elevator ceiling, its blood spraying all over the place as it landed next to me. Some of it landed in my mouth and eyes. Horrified, I tried spitting it out, but I could still taste it. It had an overly sweet saccharine taste. Now I am just waiting down here for backup, hoping for help. Most of all, I hope that my exposure to that blood didn't infect me. I keep checking my skin to see if it will turn white, but it hasn't happened yet. Tears are streaming down my face, though, and I can't stop them. When I try to wipe it away, it comes off of my hand, looking like rainbows.